97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Good morning. This is 97.1 FM Talk, and you're listening to the Eye on Health Show. It's a beautiful day outside, or at least an above average day. It's an above average day outside.
Yeah, you know that.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, we got the whole crew here. I'm Dr.
We
Steve
got a
Harvey.
Full crew here.
We got more than a crew here. We got a large complement
Actually,
of folks here.
We this have a basketball good. Team here.
We do. We do.
We never would have put that together. Team.
Yes, we do.
I'm not sure how well we do.
I don't know. Not looking at the
Mary
people
Jo's
around
a ringer over there. That's I don't know.
I don't have the height.
I don't think any of us do.
I think you might need to be our center, though. But yes, right. Yeah. So we got the usual crew here, but we also have Dr. Jufra here, who's an expert on ketamine, a general psychiatrist with Clayton Behavioral Health. And along with Dr. Jufra is Mary Jo, one of the people who has been treated with ketamine at Clayton Behavioral. So we'll have a good first-person account of what that's like. So I'm kind of excited about all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, welcome back, Dr. Jufra. It's been several
years. Yes, thank you for having me.
We changed studios. You haven't been on since we changed studios, right? Am I right?
A little nicer.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. There's pros and cons. That's for sure.
We have windows.
We have windows.
Windows. That's crazy.
There's definitely more homeless here than we had at the other studio.
Well, you just couldn't see them. There were no windows.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm excited to talk about this this kind of novel treatment for a very common problem.
Yes.
And we've done several shows on sometimes the common treatments don't work.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because just, you know, severe depression, maybe roughly one out of three people do not get better with the standard treatments. And now there's some new treatments available for those people who don't get better with the usual stuff.
And we've talked about the
transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Yeah. TMS.
TMS.
Your claim to fame. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So we talk about TMS. And today we're going to talk about ketamine, which is an exciting new pharmaceutical. We'll talk about ketamine and its close cousin, R-ketamine. And so we're here with Dr. Jufra. Let's go ahead and kick this off. So Dr. Jufra, can you? I know there's a whole lot to explain. So get to it. Tell us about ketamine.
Sure. So ketamine is an anesthetic that has been used for over 50 years in both human anesthesia and veterinary anesthesia. It's also a drug that can be misused because patients may experience a high from using it. And therefore, it can have addictive properties. But for the last 15 or 20 years, there have been many studies published that when you give ketamine to people with hard-to-treat depression, they can experience a pronounced but short-lived elevation in their mood. So ketamine is one of what we hope will be many rapid antidepressants. Traditionally, when we prescribe an antidepressant, patients are told that they may need to wait 4 to 6 weeks for the effects. Mm. With ketamine, we'll know either within hours or within a few days if ketamine helps.
Yeah, and that's one of the mind-blowing parts, because I think psychiatrists are so used to giving a prescription and saying, oh, you know, we'll wait a few weeks and see if it works or not. But with ketamine, it's quick.
It's quick. When it works, I would say, within days, we can have an answer if ketamine will work or not. Interestingly also, most antidepressants, if not all antidepressants before ketamine, work on a very specific system of chemicals in the brain that are the monoamines. People may have heard about dopamine or serotonin or noradrenaline. That's the target of virtually all oral antidepressants. Ketamine works in a completely different system, in the glutaminergic system of the brain. So therefore, it's really a radical departure for what we've been using to treat this condition. And that's really a fresh approach, which makes it very exciting.
Because it's on a completely different pathway than our standard treatments. He's got me so excited, I'm throwing things
around. Wow. Take it out on the phone.
Oopsie.
All right.
That was a good save there. I don't think the listeners noticed.
Okay. Fortunately, it's all audio. Okay. Because it works on a completely different pathway, can it ever work in conjunction with the standard treatments?
Yes. That's really the norm more than the exception.
Oh, I see.
So,
okay.
For example, there is a twin molecule of ketamine called esketamine that has been FDA approved to use for depression in conjunction with an antidepressant. So yes, most patients don't go off their medications, but
I see.
With ketamine, things certainly improve quite a bit.
And, you know, as you mentioned, we've used ketamine surgically as an anesthetic for a long time, like forever. How did it come about that it was a good treatment for depression? Did someone just come out of surgery and say, boy, my mood just feels a lot better? Is that how it happened?
So how it happened is when the medication was first introduced for human use, the doctor that synthesized the molecule came across a patient who kept asking for more and more. And the doctor asked her, why are you keep asking for more ketamine? And she said, well, these work so much better than my antidepressants. That was in the 60s, and that doctor regrets deeply not jumping on that observation. But in the late 1990s and the early 2000s, several researchers hypothesized that targeting that glutaminergic system can be helpful for depression. We have one very good first study in the year 2000. And then in 2005, there were a flurry of studies coming out. And I want to note that traditionally, as we all know, when a new medication is tested for depression or for any other condition, it's the pharmaceutical companies that do and fund the studies, which may have some biases. As we all know, companies may not publish negative studies. I mean, there's some conflict of interest, I would say. Mm-hmm. Now, because ketamine is generic and inexpensive, there was no pharmaceutical company pushing for it or doing any studies. So the studies
were done. No one can make money off of it.
Exactly. Right. So the studies were done originally by the National Institute of Mental Health and then very reputable universities like Yale University and here in town, Washington University. So I value a lot that body of data because it's really, in my view, unbiased.
And those studies had power. Good power behind them.
Yes, yes, good power. The effect of the drug is significant enough that you don't need a lot of subjects to demonstrate that it works. And paradoxically, people will say, well, if a study has 1,000 patients and now we show that it works, that is more powerful than a study with 50 patients. But in reality, statistically, smaller numbers, if the drug is really powerful, in the smaller subjects demonstrate that it is, that's more impressive. So that has been the case of ketamine.
We're kind of going into our first break here, but it is not a first-line treatment for depression, right? I mean, you're still going to try the more standard treatments first?
Exactly. There are, as we'll talk later, there are unknown risks of giving ketamine long-term, and therefore those unknown risks have to be balanced with the benefits. So it's not a first-line medication. It should really be safe for people who have failed numerous trials of antidepressants, may have failed transcranial magnetic stimulation, may have failed ECT, which has traditionally been our gold standards. And several studies have shown that ketamine is helpful among ECT failures, people who did not respond to electroconvulsive therapy.
So at least we have something else we can offer.
Yeah,
these patients. That's great. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, we got to go to our first break. When we come back, we're going to have more with Dr. Jifra and also
with Mary Jo.
Mary Jo. We want to hear your experience with it because she's been very happy with the medicine. So that's great. So stay tuned. We've got more Eye on Health after these words.
I am still living with your ghost.
Lonely. All right, we're back. This is Eye on Health, 97.1 FM Talk. And we're here with Dr. Jufra and with Mary Jo talking about using ketamine for people with severe depression that has not responded to the usual measures with medication and therapy. So we wanted to start now asking Mary Jo some questions. And this is sort of a situation where I have about 12 questions in my head, and I don't even know where to start. So if we could start here, Mary Jo, can you tell us, but before I ask you about the ketamine specifically, just could you tell us whatever you feel comfortable sharing, what was your depression like before you got better? And then when you did get better, what was that like?
Well, I think there was a trajectory over time that, you know, if somebody is depressed, you try different things. And there's a frustration because, one, they don't seem to be working, and then, two, they often cause side effects.
Yeah.
And I think that if you're feeling depressed, to add something physical that is a discomfort of any kind, I can't sleep, I can't eat, or I have headaches now, you think, well, it was better just to be depressed.
Yeah.
So you stop the medication, and then you get more depressed and you try another one or you try that one again.
Yeah.
And in time, I think for me, I just gave up. And when I say in time, I'm talking about over 20 years and having, used everything, tricyclics, MAOIs, Prozac when it became available, and so many different things that I had, I think in my mind, decided there was nothing for me, that because I was so sensitive to side effects, I could never get to a therapeutic dose, and I would just live this way forever.
Oh.
And I think that depending on what else is going on in your life, you can do that for a while, but then you encounter some new, challenge.
Yeah.
And you think, do I want to just keep on?
Yeah. Oh, and when you say you felt like you just have to live this way, what was this way? How bad was it? Or what was it like when you had that deep depression? I guess for decades? Pretty deep depression?
Yes.
What was that like?
Well, it's hard to describe, but I think a lot of people live that way.
Yeah.
And, we have terms like lives of quiet desperation.
Yeah.
And I'm very high functioning, so I'm able to do a lot of things. And in fact, over time, I learned that the best approach is distraction. Mm. So I would distract myself by work, those few things that give pleasure. Mm-hmm. But then you would always come back to this steady state. Uh-huh. And then if you do have a big challenge in life, and for me, I had the death of someone close, you begin to think, no, this really isn't the way anybody should have to live.
Oh, yeah.
And at that point, someone told me about ketamine, someone who had used it and found it helpful. And I knew nothing about it.
Yeah. Oh, how did you find Dr. Jufra from there? Did you Google it, or how do you find it?
I did. I put, Googled ketamine plus St. Louis.
Uh-huh.
And I found a couple of clinics where they were giving IV doses of ketamine, but the websites made me somewhat suspicious. They looked like spas instead of medical practices.
Yeah. Yes.
And so I thought, well, I think I want something that's associated with a medical hospital. And I had talked to a therapist I was seeing, and she said there was actually a study at WashU. And she approached the director of the study, but it turned out I was too old for the parameters of the study.
Oh, bummer. Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So after about a year, and I had tried some more medications and didn't have good experiences, she approached them again because she heard that they weren't finding enough patients to see if they had opened that up, and they hadn't. But it occurred to me, maybe I could talk to the person who was doing the study, that doctor, and see if there were other ways that he might treat me outside of the study.
Oh, right, yeah.
And when I spoke to the person who was working with him, she told me about Dr. Jufra.
Yes.
And gave me his telephone number, and I phoned and told him, and he said, why don't you join the study? And I explained that I couldn't, and so I saw him and asked, is this something you can help me with? Is this appropriate for ketamine?
Yeah. Oh, okay. And then, so after trying, it sounds like one or two dozen different medications, and then you tried ketamine, which is totally different in a whole different category. So I guess the thing I want to know about now is, so when you tried ketamine, what was that like when you tried ketamine for the first time? What was it like?
Well, Dr. Jufra administers very small doses, first of all. And the very first time, you have to have someone come with you. and they sit in the room with you. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very mild experience compared to what happens later. And then the second time, if you tolerate that, he gives a slightly stronger dose. That person who comes with you waits in the waiting room. So you're in the room by yourself. You tolerate that. And ultimately, as I understand it, you build up a dose where you can go for at least a week without requiring another dose. And at that point, I was quite amazed by both the success of it and the experience.
Oh, so what was it like to, I mean, to be miserable every day for decades, and then suddenly you felt, I guess you felt okay, or you felt all right? And what was that like?
I think it's not a general, I feel okay now. I think it's that you do notice that steady state has changed, that you're not always thinking, is this worth it? Is, you know, maybe I'd rather not keep going on.
Yeah.
And I think the really profound change for me was this death that I mentioned, which had, it had been 13 years earlier, but I had never really resolved it. And somehow with the ketamine, it was a really fascinating experience where I felt that whatever had happened, that was it. And it was a part of life, and there was no changing it. Mm-hmm. And that was a profound difference from 13 years of every day thinking, I should have changed that. If I had done X, Y wouldn't have happened.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a very grating kind of rumination.
Like constantly doubting yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And thoughts always returning to that event.
Ah, okay. So, yeah. So the ketamine was a huge help with that.
Huge. Yeah. And that has persisted.
Yeah.
So the other thing is that it's a hallucinogenic experience. We haven't talked about that.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah.
Yes. It only lasts for about 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
But during that time, I'm really curious about what that mechanism of action is, because one, I didn't know it was going to happen. And I'm told by Dr. Jufer that some people find it unpleasant. But for me, it has that property that I've read about with other hallucinogens, where you feel part of something larger than yourself, that you, and I'm sure this is what, you know, other societies who have shamans or these kinds of experiences where someone feels they're part of a spiritual or a nature that is larger than themselves.
Yeah.
I feel that way when I have the ketamine. And so you lose yourself. You lose your body, your sense of your body, and you lose your sense of your individualness. And I guess for some people that could be frightening, but for me it's a relief because I'm part of something much larger, and my problems seem not only small, but just part of a landscape of being a human being or even being an animal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and those more acute effects where you have that sense of, it sounds like a sense of oneness with everything else. And that lasts, did you say, about 20 minutes or so?
20 minutes.
Yeah. And do you see stuff or hear stuff also? Or
I do.
Can you share some of that? Is it
It's very
stuff?
Difficult to talk about it. And I don't know if my experience is unique. So it's really, this might be idiosyncratic.
Yeah.
But I see pictures, and those pictures keep morphing. So it's almost like pixels that form different pictures.
That's wild.
Wow, great information. Thanks so much, Mary Jo. Okay, guys, we got to go to break. When we come back, we're going to be talking more about using this novel medicine to treat a common problem like depression. Stay tuned for more Eye on Health after these words.
Air Comfort Service.
Open all the doors and let you out into the world.
All right, here we are, 97.1, Eye on Health, FM Talk, and we're here with Dr. Jufra and with Mary Jo, and we're talking about ketamine, a novel new treatment for major depression that doesn't get better with other treatments. So there's a lot of interesting things about ketamine is really three things, I guess. It's an anesthetic agent, it is an abusable drug, and it's also a treatment for depression. So I guess one thing that's of some concern that we want to talk about is the possibility of abuse of ketamine. So I wanted to ask Dr. Jufra about that. How abusable is ketamine, and what kind of precautions are there to make sure that doesn't become a problem?
No, absolutely. Ketamine is a drug of abuse, and there are countries where it's of epidemic proportion. So we have to be very careful. In my experience, people who do not have a history of addiction don't develop an addiction when you use it for antidepressant purposes. I've not seen any case like that. I have seen patients that we started using ketamine, and unfortunately, they were not forthcoming about their past misuse of drugs or alcohol. Mm. And you could quickly see that they will call for earlier appointments or higher doses. So when a patient calls me for ketamine, I have in general, two questions for them before bringing them to the office. The first one is, do you have a psychiatrist? Because I don't want to encourage people to simply call for a recreational experience if they're not under someone's care who can really tell us, well, he or she has failed so many drugs. And the second question is, any history of substance misuse? And if they say no to both, I don't even bring them to the office because I don't want to, you know, raise hopes and expectations. Yeah. These treatments should be saved for hard-to-treat cases. And hard-to-treat cases should be under the care of a psychiatrist. Now, somebody may call and say, look, I was on psychiatric care for 15 years. It's just nothing works, so I'm no longer seeing the psychiatrist. That's different.
Yeah, yeah.
But if we get a call from somebody who says, well, I'm just feeling down, I want to see if ketamine helps me, well, that's not the appropriate use of ketamine. That's not correct.
Shouldn't be using ketamine in that situation
no,
at all.
No.
What's the method of administration? Is it an oral medicine? Is it a shot? Is it an IV?
So ketamine is a very noble drug from that point of view. All the original studies were done with IV ketamine. IV ketamine has a bioavailability of 100%. All the ketamine that you get gets into your system.
That means that someone starts an IV,
they start an
through
IV,
your vein.
And then they give the dose over a 40-minute period. So it's not like getting a shot of ketamine to have your arm fixed, for example, after a fracture. That will be a bolus kind of administration. It's a 40-minute administration. I started doing that about 10 years ago, IV cases, but it's very expensive because the patient has to be under anesthesiology supervision. They will have to go to a surgery center, and it's just a very expensive proposition, which is unsustainable for people who will need this on an ongoing basis. But for about 5 years or so, I just do IM, which is very inexpensive, very reliable. The bioavailability is 93%, very close to IV.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know, IM means intramuscular, kind of like a flu shot. It goes into your muscle. It's not into your vein.
Yes. Now, this twin-like molecule that has been FDA approved is given intranasally. So it's like getting an ocean spray for clogged noses. And it can also be given sublingual. Ketamine has been used sublingually for the treatment of chronic pain for a very long time. So orally, the absorption is too poor, but a sublingual is about 25% bioavailability.
That means under your tongue. I'm like a translator here.
Thank you, Steve. Thank
You're
you.
Welcome, Dr. Chupa.
Yeah, right. So it's not nearly as bioavailable.
Not nearly as bioavailable.
Even sublingual.
Yeah, no, you will need to adjust the doses to account for that.
Bioavailable means gets into your system.
Yeah. Now,
translation.
How often do you have to give it?
Okay, so that's a very important question. When patients approach me about this, I explain to them that the treatment will proceed in two phases. In the first phase, we want to know if they will respond to ketamine. And that's where I give a series of maybe 4 to 6 shots with increasing doses until a target dose based on the patient's weight. If in 4 to 6 doses we see nothing, then we stop because there's no data to suggest keep going. Once, let's say in that process, we find a dose that the patient says, wow, I'm over 50% better, then what we do is say, well, call me when it wears off, because it will wear off. Like any other medication, if you stop taking it, it won't continue working. So ketamine becomes one of their medicines. Now, How long it lasts is very individual. Some patients, like Mary Jo, need it once a week. Other patients every 2 weeks or every 3 weeks or every 4 weeks. So it's an ongoing treatment. And that's where the unknown comes. We don't know what will happen to patients who receive these very modest doses on an ongoing basis for years. We're starting to accumulate that data. There are many patients around the country that are doing this. This is already being used more and more frequently. So far, so good, but nobody has done a study that says, well, what happens if you give them ketamine for 10 years? We just don't know. I can expand on that. There are some cases where ketamine is abused for a long period of time, and those patients, those people who misuse ketamine, do have serious problems. First, of course, the dependence, but second, they may develop a painful irritation of the bladder called the ketamine bladder.
Ouch.
Yes. That ketamine bladder occurs at very high doses of ketamine. You can find out, for example, how much ketamine you need to kill a bladder cell in a Petri dish.
Huh. Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And then so you know the minimum amount that will kill a bladder cell. Well, when I test ketamine in the urine of my patients, the amounts I get are about 100 to 1,000 times less than the minimum amount that kills a bladder cell in a Petri dish. But again, that doesn't mean that accumulated use over many years will develop in a problem.
And so we do have some long-term data on former abusers of it, but I'm guessing they were using way more than
astronomical amounts. Yeah, For example, Mary Jo gets 40 milligrams a week. These patients will use at least 1,000 milligrams several times a week.
Yeah.
The third problem that these patients have is brain lesions. There's a doctor here in St. Louis at WashU who first described in the 1980s, Dr. John Olney, that Steve and I have met because he trained us.
He's awesome.
Exactly. Yeah. So he found that when you give rats a very high dose of ketamine, brain cells die. He was using the minimum dose to create those lesions was 40 grams per kilogram. 40 grams.
40 grams.
Oh, huge. Yeah.
He tried 5 grams per kilogram, 10, 20, and only at 40 the lesions appear. So again, that's several orders of magnitude above.
Yeah. And lesions are areas of damage.
Lesions are
that
represent
that one.
You knew that. I know that, Dr. Jones.
Yeah, but those lesions represent brain cell death, and then atrophy, thinning of the cortex in the brain, and cognitive problems.
Yeah. So really big doses can cause brain damage and bladder damage.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the million-dollar question is, will small doses over decades cause that? That's what we always have to factor in. I think if you ask a patient who suffered depression for 20 or 30 years, they will take the unknown risk.
Yeah.
But that's one reason we wouldn't want to put everybody on ketamine.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the reason. It's not a first thing to try at all.
I think we have a patient sitting here who probably agrees because it sounds like almost right away, Mary Jo, you started to know this treatment was definitely different than what you'd tried before.
Absolutely. Yeah, my whole life changed, really.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, really exciting stuff. Now, what is... hate to put you on the spot here. What is the success rate with our current antidepressants, the Paxils and the...
Yes.
What's the failure rate of those?
The success is pretty good. As Steve mentioned earlier in the show, about 30% of patients just won't respond well to medications, or they will have just a very modest improvement.
So 70% will do well. If we throw them on one of these standard antidepressant treatments... are going to do better.
Well, or 70% will get better after trying at least a few medicines.
It might not be the first
medicine, but 70%
will. So now we're looking at that 30% that are not responding.
Right. Yeah.
Is ketamine the next step, or do you think we should still try things like TMS or even ECT before we jump to a ketamine? Where does ketamine fit in that lineup?
Well, I think it's a judgment call. And different patients may have different, there will be a different answer for different patients. But all those three are wonderful new additions to the way we treat. Well, ECT is not new. ECT has been around since the 1930s. But TMS and ketamine and another group that is called the neurosteroids that, again, work very different than the other medications. It's a very exciting different possibilities to add.
Science is awesome.
Yeah. It is.
Yes.
It's better living through chemistry, right?
Right, right, yeah.
Oh, look at that.
Ah.
He's playing us out.
Great, all right.
All right, guys, we're going to break. When we come back, we're going to have more Eye on Health. Stay tuned after these words. All right, welcome back. It's Eye on Health. Hey, what a great show we've had today.
This is awesome.
This is great. It's right up your alley. So it's great.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So now we got to do a whole show on eye surgery, and then you're going to then you see.
Then I'll feel left out.
Well, hey, one way that's very common way to treat depression is eating. That's how I treat my depression, is eating. And I just want to give a shout out to a local restaurant, Kimmel's, owned by the Cusimanos. Yeah. They've been in town forever. They used to be downtown. They moved out to Westport probably 6 months ago. We've talked about them before. We did a family event at Kimmel's last night. It was just absolutely fantastic. And the reason I want to give a shout out, first of all, it's a local business. We love supporting local businesses here. But if you're thinking about like a holiday party for an office or maybe a family holiday party, it was fantastic. They've got this back room and Mark will treat you great and all the staff. So if you're thinking about something to do for your holidays or you just want to go overeat to try to treat your depression by overeating, is that an acceptable treatment?
Anybody prescribe that?
It does boost dopamine. Yeah, sure.
Check out Kimmel's. You can check them out on the web. They're at Westport now. They're not downtown. They're out at Westport. Fantastic new location. Check them out for your like office holiday party or family party. Now, let's get back into the real stuff.
All right. Let's do that. Yeah. So
we're talking about a better treatment probably for depression, not overeating, but ketamine.
talking ketamine. So yeah, I think one thing everybody's curious about is so we know, for example, that ketamine worked really well for Mary Jo here, but I assume it does not work for everybody.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So what do the percentages look like or how what's the expectation there with ketamine?
So the original studies of ketamine recruited patients that had failed maybe two or three antidepressants. And among those patients with a failure to two or three drugs, about 75-80% got better. But in real life, in real practice, patients who have failed two or three medications should not be given ketamine because there will be 10 other things to try before ketamine. So among people who have failed numerous antidepressants, have failed shock treatment, have failed anything else that we have to offer, I would say that 35% or 40%, that would be a realistic expectation for 35% or 40% will have a very nice response. So this is far from panacea. Yeah. This is not helping everybody. We see everyday cases that don't respond, but it's certainly worth a try because we will know, as I said, in a couple of weeks if this is the answer or not.
Yeah. So with tough patients like that, it's pretty good chance, but less than 50-50.
It is less than 50-50, but it's remarkable that after failing a dozen medications and ECT, we can still recover one every three patients.
Sure. Yeah, less than 50-50 is still better than zero.
Oh, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, because people in that situation, you know, if they've tried 24 antidepressants, if you're going to try antidepressant number 25, the chances of antidepressant number 25 working is probably
close
too small.
It is
basically approaches zero. Yes. Yeah. So 40% is pretty pretty.
35% to 40% is what I tell prospective patients.
Yeah. Okay.
And Mary Jo is one of them.
Yeah. So we want to hear a little more about your experience with ketamine. So one thing I'm curious about, can you tell us? You get ketamine once a week? Is that right?
I do.
Yeah. And are you doing other stuff too with the ketamine, like either, if you don't mind telling us, medication or therapy or things like that? Or what else are you doing?
I do what's called talk therapy, which unfortunately a lot of people don't offer anymore. It's actually harder and harder to find.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of physicians, you know, can see six patients in an hour and prescribe drugs. And so in terms of the income generated by that, it's attractive. But I've been very fortunate in finding people who still do it or who will make exceptions and do it with me. And that's very helpful. Yeah. And particularly it's helpful, I think, in conjunction with the ketamine. And of course, we're talking now about problems with payment and insurance. And it's really... because the ketamine, until the S-ketamine was approved, isn't covered by insurance. Mm. So there are a lot of people who suffer who might benefit from it, those people who haven't benefited from from antidepressants or other things that don't have access to it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
One of the unfortunate things is the esketamine has been made very expensive. And of course, only I think people who have insurance can afford that. So yeah. I've been very lucky that I can both afford the ketamine and my insurance covers the talk therapy.
Yeah, yeah. And so the people know that esketamine is the medication that's it's a close relative of ketamine, and it was recently FDA approved for major depression, whereas ketamine is not officially approved because no drug company is going to go through that multi-million dollar process.
Is esketamine a brand name?
No, it's the generic name. So esketamine, it's an enantiomer. Remember that from chemistry?
Yeah, vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Jones majored in chemistry, so he knows what I'm talking about when I talk about enantiomers.
Somehow he knows that, yeah.
Yeah.
But, okay, so that's a generic name. Is there a generic available for esketamine?
No.
So
no.
It's only a brand name. That's why it's so expensive.
Because ketamine is a generic drug. Yeah. No pharmaceutical company would invest money in putting it to the market. So they had this enantiomer, which is it's a minor difference from ketamine, as we all can understand, those who had to take chemistry like us. So that was patented, and that allowed a pharmaceutical company to put a product out on the market, but it's cost between 300 and 400 times the retail rate is. Retail cost is just astronomical compared to generic ketamine.
Yeah. Which, if both of them were free, which one's better, esketamine or ketamine, or we don't know?
No, there's never been a study comparing one to the other, but there is no reason to feel the enantiomer alone will make any difference from molecule.
They just did that for patenting reasons, I'm
exactly.
Sure. Okay, so if you have insurance and you can try to run your esketamine through insurance, is it still maybe cheaper to just use the generic and just not even run it through insurance off-label?
Well, that's still unknown because payers or insurance companies are still in the process of adjusting to this new esketamine that has come out in March because it can't be given at home. So the patients who get esketamine intranasally have to go to a doctor's office, stay there in a room. I mean, so there will be a cost associated with giving it.
Sure.
And then the cost of the medication, I said, is very expensive. I don't know what coverage will look like, especially people who need it on an ongoing basis.
Yeah. So check out Clayton Behavioral for if you're interested in ketamine treatment.
Thank you so much, Mary Jo, for coming in and sharing your experience.
Yeah,
thanks for having me.
Thanks, Dr. Jufra, of course. Absolutely. Yeah. Stay tuned for On the Money, $28,000.
That's right. We'll talk about
it. That'll help.
Get more at 971talk.com.